Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Welcome, everyone, to another delivery of Owl Posts. I am one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, coming to you from Diagon Alley, enjoying a nice butterbeer here at the Leaky Cauldron, joined by my favorite co-host, Treya Coffey.
Hi, I won't tell your other co-hosts, don't worry.
I was like, I'm going to be in trouble.
Someone's
going
to not like that one.
I know. Luckily, I only have one co-host, and she's perfect, so there's no need for another one. Yeah, that's right. I'm so excited to be at this chapter because I might say that a lot because I feel like I've said that about every chapter that we've talked about. So it's not true. It's just that every chapter is exciting again. But Diagon Alley it's our first actual experience with what the wizarding world is like. I love it. That's my favorite thing is to watch Harry step into that world. And you've got to think, in the back of his mind somewhere, is kind of like, what the heck did I just step into?
Right.
Well, I mean, I ask you, so put yourself in Harry's shoes. Like, what would you be thinking stepping into a place like the Leaky Cauldron and nobody's wearing anything normal from your point of view? I mean, and all these people keep coming up to you and being like, you're the best thing ever. It's like being Michael Jordan and not knowing it.
See, that's weird. That's a sports reference. I don't know that I get that one, but just kidding. I totally get that one.
Okay, I was like, whew.
I don't really follow sports, so that one I get. I mean, I'm not crazy. I did see Space Jam, so, I mean, we're okay.
Okay. Well, I mean, as long as you've seen Space Jam, then we're good. Space Jam told me who Michael Jordan was.
Yeah, it would be really, really odd to have that sort of, I don't know, that sort of pressure on him. He's 11. He doesn't even know who he is. He doesn't know who his family is. It would be so overwhelming just to walk into that and not be equipped to handle it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that was exactly what Dumbledore had been trying to avoid for the first 11 years of Harry's life. So it was really interesting to be like, oh, okay, wise old man, got it.
I mean, I'm trying to think. So for our audience, think of this. You're Justin Timberlake, but you don't know it because your mind's been erased, basically. And you walk into places and everybody keeps shaking your hand and want to take your picture and all that kind of stuff, but you don't know why. Like, it would just be so strange. And I think that's what is so interesting, too, as Harry gets confronted with some things in this chapter where he already has to start deciding what side he's going to be on. I think that's really fascinating as well. Because, you know, when he runs into Malfoy...
Who we don't know is Malfoy yet.
We don't know it's Malfoy, but it is Malfoy. The little snot getting his his robes done at Madame Malkin's before Harry's. And, you know, he's talking smack about muggles and non-wizarding folks, and it's, I love that Harry's experience with Dudley immediately turns him against somebody like Malfoy.
I really wish that had been in the movies. Like, of everything we've seen so far, it'd be great to have pieces, but this one I really wish had been in the movies, because it's such an interesting interaction between Harry and Malfoy, and a real testament to character as to an 11-year-old being able to right away identify really poor character from the get-go. And you get introduced to so many of these themes and stereotypes that become such a big deal as the books progress. Slytherin being the best house, him talking about, Malfoy talking about, or the pointed-faced blonde kid, as we'll call him, talking about how only wizards and witches from wizard witch families should be, which he doesn't refer to as pure blood, but that only pure bloods should be allowed. You know, just all of it, all of a sudden, just spewed out of this little kid's mouth. It's both angering and sort of heartbreaking to think that an 11-year-old already feels that way. It was crazy. It was just so crazy.
They say out of the mouth of babes, and it's a testament to J.K. Rowling subtly showing how the beliefs of a family get passed down from generation to generation. Obviously, the Malfoys very specifically passed down this. But take the Dursleys. The Dursleys don't pass down specifically hate to Dudley. They just raise him to think that he's the most special boy in the world. Who's my special boy, my Duddykins? I mean, like,
that was gross.
They just dote on him in such a way that trains him to believe that. It's not necessarily like a regiment. Like, you get the feeling that from the moment that Malfoy can understand things, his parents are drilling him in Dark Lord catechism, you know?
He's not being inoculated already.
Exactly. But what she does is she shines a mirror that those two things do the same thing to children. And I think it's so brilliant that what happens with Harry when he's faced with this is that he already has been prepared for this unknowingly. It wasn't on purpose. Dumbledore didn't do it on purpose, but he's already been prepared to say, no, I don't want to be a part of that, you know, because I've already been bullied by people like you my whole life. And Harry's already starting to realize, I get to choose who I want to be a part of now. Like, and that's why I think this starts a trend where Harry picks up the strays, you know, the odder people of the universe that other people might look up as being odd, like Hagrid. I mean,
he creates an army of misfits.
Exactly. There you go. He's like, it's like the island of misfit toys over there at Hogwarts.
But I think what speaks to everyone on some level is this reaction that Harry has to this kid beyond immediately identifying that he's like Dudley and he wants nothing to do with this kid. But he also doesn't want to show this kid any weakness. And so every time the kid says something that Harry has no idea about, he's just like, I don't know, mumbles his way through it. And I think, again, that's just one more way that he becomes so relatable, is we've all been in that situation where you're sitting in a meeting or you're in school or you're around friends or family and you're like, I have no idea what's going on. I'm just going to smile and nod or shake my head or just mimic whatever's happening around me because you just have no idea. And it's like, oh,
just smile and wave.
We've
boys.
We've all been there smile to be like, oh, wave. Yeah, sure. Yep, I agree.
Well, and that is what's interesting is that Harry doesn't get everything within the conversation, but he can pick up enough. And what he's picking up, he doesn't like what Malfoy's laying down. And again, I think you're, like you said, it's a testament to character. But I think it's also a testament to the way in which Harry's nurture so far has affected him. And that nurture was, he didn't want to be like that. That he didn't want to emulate any of that whatsoever. Instead of being the angry person who ends up becoming what he hates, he is dedicated to, now that he has a choice, he's not going to act that way at all. And I think that's a really, I mean, it's a powerful lesson, because nature, nurture, who you are, all that stuff. It's very interesting that Harry isn't what most people would expect him to be. And I love that about his character. And we'll keep calling that out, I think, in the series, but it's really cool. Quickly, before I forget, I love that this chapter starts off with owl posts coming at the window. So that's wonderful. Got to call that out when you get some owl posts because, well, that's our show.
Yeah. And I love that, you know, Harry's like, what is the owl doing? He's like, he wants to get paid. Like, come on now. What's wrong with you? Like, he doesn't know anything about your world, just, but you should know that.
You know, just go get it in my coat. Give him the what does he say? I think it's the,
it's canoe, it's Canucks.
They call it Canucks. Yeah. So Harry's like, I don't know what that means. So, yeah, which is wonderful because as we visit Gringotts here, we get a little bit of a lesson about how everything works in the wizarding world. And one of them is they work on odd numbers.
Yeah, I saw that.
So everything is by, which I thought was kind of funny and enjoyable. And I also like that very subtly she's just dropping little things here and there about, well, Cornelius Fudge, we learn about for the first time, that he's kind of a dolt in charge of the Ministry of Magic and he asked Dumbledore for advice every single day. You know, I just, things you wouldn't necessarily expect to learn in a chapter like this. You know, Hagrid's just kind of shooting the breeze about the wizarding world and how things work, trying to educate Harry. And I think it's wonderful because so many, again, of those things will get picked up, especially in the next book. I mean, Fudge is going to be a huge part of her beginning to talk about government, corruption in government, you know, weak leaders, that kind of stuff. It's all going to begin in book two. But you would never know that. So I love it.
I do. I love the introduction to Gringotts when we learn she also gets to introduce goblins and dragons in this sense. And she gets to talk about spells and weird underground stuff. She just gets to introduce so much. This chapter... So the last chapter was sort of a shock to the system introduction to the wizarding world. And then this one, she just throws everything in the kitchen sink at you. It's so, so full and long. I almost wish it was two chapters that she stopped after Gringotts and then picked up and Diagon Alley again. It would have been really short, but I feel like I needed a little bit of a break. Like I'd been so introduced. I needed like a breath of air and then to go back in. And I'm pretty sure she did that on purpose because Harry doesn't get that. But I really wanted that. So thanks.
Yeah. I mean, that alone is fascinating. Just the Gringotts part. But like you said, then there's the whole other part of Diagon Alley where they go back and they go finish all the shopping, they get the wand and everything. And I thought it was really interesting that who would have thought that the whole idea of the Ministry of Magic comes up here?
Yeah.
And Harry's like, but what do they do? Like, I don't understand. And he's like, well, their main job is to keep it from muggles that there are still witches and wizards up and down the country. And he's like, why? And I love what he says to Harry. He's like, everybody be wanting magical solutions to their problems.
And then he goes on to complain about it taking so long to get to London.
Yes, yes.
Like he clearly wanted the magical solution.
Exactly, exactly. And it is very interesting to me because she does set up this this world where we all think, oh, wouldn't it be so great to be a wizard or a witch? And yeah, it would, but it doesn't mean there aren't any problems in your life. You know, a magic doesn't solve relationship issues. You know, like the main things in life can't be fixed with magic. I mean, people still have to have jobs and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So it makes life kind of fun and cool and awesome. But once we start to get into the magical world, especially with the Weasleys, we see it's just another part of life that creates a different set of problems.
I also don't think anywhere in the movies does she talk about why wizards are secret from the muggle world. Not in this series. I know we touch on it when you go on to like Fantastic Beasts, but she doesn't really say in the movies anywhere. It doesn't come up why they keep it so secret. So I think that was really interesting, too, that she just kind of puts it out there at the beginning. Like, this is why we're separated, because Otherwise, everyone would want us just to fix all their problems, and that's not how it works.
Yeah. And if we did, it would be why we can't have nice things.
Right? This is why we can't have nice things, people, because they're all magical. So, yeah, I thought it was really interesting that she just addressed that straight from the get-go.
Yeah.
I did like, at the very beginning of the chapter, not only when we get the owl post, but just before that, when Harry sort of wakes up thinking it was all a dream. Like, he's just like, that wasn't real. I must just eaten something bad or been asleep or something. And then...
must have had a bad sausage.
Right, because those were all real too. But, you know, he wakes up and he's like, oh, wait, that was real. Okay. So I'm not completely off my rocker, because I think that's probably where I would be too. I'd be like, was that real? So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting too. But it was a long chapter and really very full and vibrant. We also get to meet Mr. Ollivander in this one.
Which is fascinating, the whole wand choosing, because it's a little bit different than it is in the book.
In the movie.
And it's a lot longer, right? You can tell Harry's there for, it seems like, at least an hour trying to find the right wand. But it is fascinating because Harry, from the beginning, isn't quite sure what to make of Ollivander. And he's really not sure that he likes him.
It gives him the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, exactly. Because he feels like, he even says those silvery eyes were a bit creepy. And really, really interesting. And we learn a little bit about wand lore too, which is fun. I forgot how much we actually learn about the wands. Ollivander's wands are specifically made with unicorn hairs, phoenix tail feathers, and hearts of dragon's dream, which is very interesting. So it's only those three cores he uses, but then he uses all the different types of woods. And what I liked is when he starts telling him about his parents' wands, and you get a hint for book three that James's wand was excellent for transfiguration. So makes sense that he'll be an animagus.
Just ruined it for everyone. Good job.
Sorry, guys. Totally ruined it. But I also really like, you know, he says the wand chooses the wizard. And it's wonderful the way she describes when Harry picks up his wand for the first time, and how he suddenly felt warm. And it's almost that, you get that sense of that feeling like, oh, I'm home.
I like how it's like he succeeded in something too. The way she treats it is like, yes, he got some sort of victory. He accomplished something, and you're like, he just found his wand. Like, he didn't do anything but hold a bunch of wands, but all right, sure, why not?
He caused a red and gold sparks shot from the end of the wand like fireworks through dancing spots all over the walls. Come on. That's reason to clap.
Yeah.
And of course, then we learn that the wand whose brother Harry's is gave him the scar. And you know, the connection, and I think that's one of the things is that you really start to pick up on if you have read the series before, is all the hints that she gives throughout, even just book one, that Harry and Voldemort are connected somehow. And this is the biggest one so far, but there have been some other small ones already in these chapters where you're like, huh, okay, well, that's interesting. And I really like just how much she is connecting all those things together and laying that you know, track for what she's going to do. Even as simple as, you know, on the list, The History of Magic by Bathilda Bagshot is his school book, as well as, we know it's going to be big later, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So those things. I wanted to ask you specifically, the meeting with Professor Quirrell, a little bit different here than what we see in the film. I forgot that that Hagrid kind of gives you more background on the story that everybody thinks they know about Quirrell that helps you think, like, throw you off the track.
Which explains so much later.
Yes, exactly.
Because I do find that when he explained that, I found myself going, how did I explain that to myself in the movie? Oh, that's right, I didn't. Yeah, I mean, he still was stammering and kind of what I like to think he was squirrely Quirrell. It's a little squirrely, but yeah, I mean, it really explains what happened to him, and that, you know, he ran into vampires in the forest or whatever, and he's gonna go get a book on him now. But what we know from just general lore knowledge about vampires, you would think he's also a vampire now. So that, it just leaves you with some questions about him already. You already get like an uneasy feeling about the professor.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it's interesting too, because I mean, if you're reading it the first time, as Hagrid says, you know, poor guy, you know, he's brilliant, but, you know, he's really only good at Burke learning, you know, got some firsthand experience, took a year off, ran into some nasty bit of business, and, you know, now he's back. And ever since, he's been a little bit scared of his own subject, his own students, and maybe his own shadow, basically. And it sets up this guy that, as I look back retrospectively, well, that's exactly what happened to him. He was studying abroad and got picked up by a spirit known as Voldemort. And now he's a repository for the guy.
Way to ruin the end of the book. What is with you tonight? I'm hashtagging just all yourself with spoilers appropriately enough.
Son of a spoiler. But I think that's so interesting because, yeah, again, the first time you read it, that I feel like throws you off the scent. But when you go back, you're like, oh, he legitimately just told the truth about what happened to him. He just ex-nayed the Voldemort.
He just replaced that with a vampire. He didn't even change it that much. Like, yeah, it's still a V.
No. Which is where they always say the best lie is full of the truth.
Because it's easy to remember.
Exactly. And that's exactly what he did. And it works. I mean, it really does. So
yeah, I found this chapter just a little sad, almost ending at the end. So we get dumped into this world and completely overwhelmed. And then at the end, he starts telling Hagrid that everyone thinks he's special. All these people want to know him, but he doesn't know anything about anything. And he's not even good at magic yet. And then, you know, he's like, well, you'll be fine. All right. See ya. Peace out, kid. And he like leaves him. And you're like, wait, what? What just happened? And he goes, you know, don't miss your train. That was about it. And it's just hard. Like, I imagine Harry just didn't want to go back to the Dursleys at this point, and he didn't even like take him back to the Dursleys. So,
and it is interesting. And I love the way that Hagrid just tells him, he's like, look, everybody starts at the beginning at Hogwarts. You know, even if you grew up in a magical family, you still start at the beginning. And you're all on level playing field. It's going to be okay. And trying to relieve that anxiety that Harry could be feeling. And I like that. I like that a lot. That he's like, you've been singled out and it's hard, but you're going to have a great time at Hogwarts. And he's like, a matter of fact, I still do. Talking about himself. And I think, you know, what's fun about Dumbledore sending Hagrid to pick up Harry is it gives Harry a huge security blanket in Hagrid as a friend. And, you know, like, what better person to have on your side than a giant, you know, going to a place that you have no idea about, but you have somebody on your side who's physically huge and apparently has a huge heart and loves you and your parents already. You know, it's a good plan by Dumbledore to send Hagrid.
Especially with the whole whiskery sobbing tears from the very beginning to now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I love that. Last thing that jumped out to me that I forgot is all let's talk about the houses. About how Slytherin's no good, Hufflepuffs are just like not the Hufflepuff's the house that everybody makes fun of already. But Slytherin, that's bad. You don't want to be a part of Slytherin. And I think that is interesting to see that how other people's ideas of the wizarding world are already having an impact on how Harry thinks about the wizarding world. Because the only thing he knows in a few weeks when he gets sorted is he does not want to be Slytherin. Not Slytherin. Not Slytherin.
God, you're just full of spoilers tonight.
But I think that's what... I think it's interesting because it's planted here of why he would feel like that. One, that boy wants to be in Slytherin that I can't stand already. And Hagrid said that all the dark witches or wizards come from Slytherin. I don't want to be that. You know, so I do think it's interesting that even though Harry comes from a world that's completely different than the wizarding world, he doesn't go to Hogwarts a blank slate.
Yeah.
Like, he's already started to be filled with the ideas of who he's going to be and what side he's going to be on and what he wants to be when he's a part of this world. I think that's really the neatest thing to me that she does throughout the series at the beginning. If you're just reading it for the first time, you slowly start to pick that up. And if you read it again, you're like, oh, wow, like, goodness, I totally missed all that stuff the first time through.
It's true. It's true.
Well, I cannot wait to get to next week when we'll be talking about the journey from platform 9¾. We'll dive into the Sorting Hat soon. Potions Master, so much more to talk about. I love this book, and it's been a blast talking this week on Owlpost with you. Don't forget, if you want to interact with the show, we want to hear from you. So please do hit us up on social media. We are over there on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And if you like email or the millennial version of Owlpost, nobody uses email anymore. But if you still love it, there's a great way to contact us. Go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose Owlpost, and that will come to me and Drea. And of course, on iTunes, you can find our show, subscribe, hit us up with a star rating and review, tell other people about us, you know, like send out your own owl tweet posts about it, your hoot posts. And so we would love...
Sorry, that one got me.
We would love to have you share. So, Drea, if there are listeners who would like to interact with you online or maybe ask a Harry Potter question... Where can they find you?
So on the Hoop Post, aka the Twitters, you can find me at PCF Chick, and on Instagram you can find me at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
You can find me on Twitter at Matt Rushing 02. You can find me over on the Trek FM network. I'm doing The Orb with Chris Jones. We talk about Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, that is. And doing the General Geek Show, the 602 Club. Come check us out. It's so much fun. We talk about all the things we love in fandom, all the different fandoms, not just relegated to one. Of course, we also have Star Wars the 602 Club collection. You can find both of those on iTunes. So I hope you'll hit those up and give them a listen. We talked about all the Harry Potter films, so at least you want to check out those for sure. And here on the network, doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, where we talk about Star Wars each and every week, just diving into fun new topics that we love. That just it's really just two fans sitting around talking like you would if you're having a, you know, drink with your buddy. Yeah, that's what we do. So come check us out at Aggressive Negotiations. Well, thanks everybody for checking your Owlpost today.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.